So every enterprise on the planet right now is basically trapped in this massive paradox.
Oh, absolutely. It's the defining tension of modern data architecture, really.
Right, because on one hand, leadership wants these, omniscient AI agents that can answer literally any question about the business in real time.
But then the security and compliance teams are just absolutely terrified.
Exactly. They're terrified of what happens when those same AI agents actually get access to the company's deepest, darkest data repository.
Yeah, I mean, you're trying to build this all-knowing oracle, but you have to keep it blindfolded just enough so it doesn't accidentally email the unreleased Q4 financials to like a random vendor.
Which would be catastrophic.
Right. And we are watching companies attempt to fundamentally rewrite their entire infrastructure to solve this, moving away from those old isolated data silos and toward these massive unified ecosystems.
Okay, let's unpack this, because today's mission is to really cut through the noise of that exact architectural shift. But for you listening, we're doing a deep dive into a highly concentrated stack of notes from the AI Data Daily newsletter, specifically from Monday, March 24th, 2026.
And the sources today are, well, they're a bit of a wild ride.
Yeah, they really cover the entire spectrum of the problem. We're looking at massive security lockdowns at the enterprise layer, the underlying inference engines powering these models, and the really fragile data pipelines engineers are building to feed them.
Down to a literal browser game that simulates the sheer financial terror of trying to build artificial general intelligence.
Which we will definitely get to because it is amazing.
It really is. But the through line here for all of this is friction. The friction between performance and security, between open source and proprietary.
And between enterprise control and developer autonomy.
Exactly.
So our sources point us straight to that first point of friction, which is happening right now at FabCon 2026 in Atlanta.
Right, the big Microsoft Fabric event.
Yeah. And for those of you tracking the enterprise space, Fabric is a huge focus right now. And looking at the notes, the overarching theme of this event is the complete convergence of operational and analytical systems.
Which is a huge deal, historically speaking, because, those two environments were always kept strictly quarantined from one another.
Right, because you didn't want to break the live systems.
Exactly. Your operational database handled the live transactions, right? The e-commerce checkouts, the inventory updates. You optimize that purely for speed and uptime.
Because if the checkout page goes down, you lose money instantly.
Spot on. Then you relied on these really complex ETL pipelines to extract that data, transform it, and load it into a totally separate analytical warehouse.
So your data scientists could run those heavy historical queries without accidentally bringing down the live checkout system.
Exactly. But the business side doesn't want to wait for the nightly batch job anymore. I mean, they want real-time analytics on live data.
Right, which leads to this push towards zero ETL or HTP architectures, hybrid transactional and analytical processing.
Yeah.
But merging operational and analytical systems sounds like trying to rebuild an airplane's engine while you're currently flying at 30,000 feet. Like if
Oh.
you drop that quarantine, aren't you just inviting a rogue BI query to consume all the compute and crash the live system?
Yeah, that is the primary engineering hurdle, which is why platforms like Fabric are leaning so heavily into strict resource isolation at the compute layer while unifying the storage layer.
Okay, so the data lives in one place.
Right, in one lake. But the compute engines querying it are segregated. However, what's fascinating here is that while you might solve the compute contention, unifying the storage creates a much, much more severe problem.
The security blast radius.
Exactly. When you put all your operational and analytical data under one roof, a single vulnerability exposes literally everything.
Which provides the exact context for this barrage of security updates Microsoft just announced for Fabric using Microsoft Purview.
Yeah, they had to do this.
The newsletter outlines expanded data loss prevention, or DLP, to restrict access for all structured data across one lake. We're talking broad coverage across SQL databases, KQL databases, warehouses, all of it.
They're also exposing sensitivity labels through public APIs now.
Right, and integrating lakehouse indicators into insider risk management.
Because they're attempting to shift security from the perimeter to the actual data payload itself.
Wait, explain that difference for us.
Sure. So traditional role-based access control, or RBAC, is a perimeter defense. It basically checks if your user ID is allowed in the room. What Purview is attempting with these sensitivity labels is to tag the data at a granular level.
So the security policy travels with the data.
Exactly. Regardless of which compute engine or which user pulls it up, the policy is attached to the data itself.
But the update that really stands out here is the introduction of DSPM for AI.
Oh yeah, data security posture management.
All right, specifically designed to monitor interactions from co-pilots and data agents. Now, Microsoft's marketing philosophy for this is security built in, not bolted on. But I have to challenge that framing.
Go for it.
If you are deploying an entirely new fleet of AI monitors, specifically to watch the actions of your existing AI agents, you are inherently bolting a new surveillance layer onto the system.
Yeah.
I mean, how is that built in?
It's a fair critique of the marketing language, for sure. But the reality of why DSPM for AI is necessary, it really exposes the limitation of traditional security architecture when you apply it to large language models.
Because LLMs are unpredictable.
Right. In a traditional deterministic software environment, a user executes a specific SQL query, and the system evaluates if that user has permission to run that exact query against those specific tables.
It's a one-to-one, totally predictable interaction. The system doesn't care why you're running the query, only if you have the keys.
Correct. But AI copilots are non-deterministic. They possess semantic agency.
Semantic agency.
Yeah. When a user prompts a copilot with something vague, like cross-reference our recent customer churn with any internal emails mentioning competitor pricing.
The copilot dynamically generates a multi-step execution plan.
Exactly. It rummages through unstructured exchange data, structured one-lake databases, KQL logs. The traditional RBAC system fails here because the copilot itself has elevated privileges to do its job.
Oh, I see. But it might be synthesizing highly sensitive information based on a prompt from a user who really shouldn't see the synthesized result.
Exactly. So the security layer has to understand the semantic intent of the data being retrieved, not just the file path.
Wow. So it actually requires an LLM to police an LLM.
That is the core of DSPM for AI. It intercepts the interaction and analyzes the context of the prompt and the sensitivity of the data the agent is attempting to synthesize.
It isn't just checking a padlock. It's actively interpreting the conversation between the user and the agent to prevent a contextual data leak. But think about that compute overhead. If the enterprise data lake is now this live, highly sensitive web that requires AI agents to monitor other AI agents just to maintain compliance.
The sheer volume of inference compute required behind the scenes is just staggering.
Astronomical. You need incredibly powerful brains powering all these agents, which leads directly to our next source, and a massive shift in how AI infrastructure is actually being hosted.
Yeah, the tectonic plates of the AI infrastructure market are definitely shifting right now, specifically regarding where and how these models are served.
According to our daily notes, Fireworks AI is now available directly on Azure through Microsoft Foundry.
Which is huge.
The source describes Fireworks AI as a high-performance, low-latency, open-model inference platform. And the newsletter explicitly points out that this integration brings, quote, serious competition to hosted inference providers.
Yeah, because this represents a critical commoditization of the model tier. For the past few years, the major hosted inference providers, you know, companies building the massive closed-source frontier models, they relied on this assumption that enterprise customers would pay a premium.
Not just for the intelligence of the model, but for the managed infrastructure required to run it reliably at scale.
Exactly. Because taking an open source model like Llama or Mixtral and trying to run it yourself at low latency was an absolute nightmare for a standard enterprise engineering team.
Right. So here's where it gets really interesting. Is this basically like Azure renting out the world-class racetrack? But Fireworks AI is letting you bring in your own highly tuned, custom open source race car.
That is a fantastic analogy.
Yeah.
Because LLM inference is fundamentally a memory bandwidth problem, not just a compute problem.
Oh, really? Not compute.
Well, compute is part of it. But when generating tokens, the bottleneck is frequently how fast you can move the model weights from the high bandwidth memory into the streaming multiprocessors on the GPU. You run into issues with the key value cache filling up, which leads to idle compute time. So companies like Fireworks AI, they didn't just take open source models and put them on standard servers.
They optimized the engine.
Deeply. They completely re-engineered the low-level CUDA kernels. They implemented advanced continuous batching and optimized the page attention algorithms.
So using the racetrack analogy, the traditional hosted model providers were essentially selling a proprietary lockdown operating system and telling enterprises that was the only way to get high performance.
Right.
But Fireworks AI has built this hyper-optimized virtualization layer that allows completely open-source applications to run faster and more efficiently on the exact same underlying hardware.
That captures the dynamic perfectly. If we connect this to the bigger picture by making this inference engine available natively inside Microsoft Foundry, the deployment friction drops to near zero.
Because Azure is providing the raw compute.
The GPUs, yeah.
Yeah.
And the secure environment, heavily fortified by that Purview architecture we just discussed.
And Fireworks AI provides the optimized software engine.
Exactly. So the enterprise can now bring a highly customized, fine-tuned open source model, deploy it inside their own secure tenant, and achieve token generation speeds that rival or beat the closed proprietary models.
And the cost implications there have to be massive.
Yeah.
I mean, if Azure makes its margin on renting out the underlying compute, they are heavily incentivized to make it as easy as possible for you to use whatever weights you want.
As long as you burn the GPU hours on their cloud.
Exactly. So why should hosted inference providers be sweating over this specific integration?
Because their moat is evaporating. Their moat was the difficulty of enterprise-grade deployment. It accelerates the trend of enterprises utilizing ensembles of smaller, fine-tuned open models for specific tasks.
Like the security monitoring agents we were just talking about.
Yes, rather than routing every single query to a massive, expensive frontier model.
Makes total sense. But, you know, it's easy to look at this from a high altitude, talking about zero ETL architectures on Fabric or hyper-optimized inference kernels on Azure.
It sounds great in a slide deck.
Right, but someone actually has to write the pipelines to feed these live HTAP systems. Moving from the massive data centers down to the developers in the trenches reveals just how fragile this bleeding-edge technology actually is.
Oh, the architectural theory is pristine, but the implementation is absolutely brutal.
Yeah. So our sources highlight a developer who recently published a reference architecture for a six-tier streaming lakehouse on GitHub.
Just hearing six-tier streaming lakehouse makes me sweat a little.
I know, right? The stack they are utilizing is heavy. It's Flink, Fless, Lance, Payman, Iceberg, and Iggy. For anyone building real-time infrastructure, this represents the absolute frontier of separating ingestion, state management, vectorization, and table formats.
It's cutting edge.
But the developers shared a critical gotcha lesson they learned the hard way regarding Apache Paymon.
Ah, Paymon. Yeah. So Paymon is a streaming data lake format designed to support high-throughput updates and deletes.
Which is essential if you're attempting that operational analytical convergence we discussed earlier.
Yeah.
But the note warns that Paymon's aggregation engine treats every single insert as a delta.
Right.
Because of this, the developer states that seed jobs must run exactly once, or the data gets completely corrupted or duplicated downstream. So what does this all mean for the engineers actually building this? Is it like accidentally hitting refresh on a checkout page and getting double charged on your credit card?
That is exactly what it's like. It exposes the inherent danger of backfilling historical data into an engine designed primarily for real-time streaming.
Because you want the pipeline to be idempotent.
Right, yes. In a robust pipeline, your ingestion layer should ideally be idempotent, meaning you can run the same operation multiple times without changing the result beyond the initial application.
But if Paymon's aggregation engine is interpreting every historical record injected during a seed job as a net new state change,
then running that seed job twice doesn't just overwrite the data, it compounds it. Yeah. If you have an aggregation running in Flink downstream that calculates total daily revenue, and your seed job accidentally fires twice because of, say, a network timeout.
Or a misconfigured retry policy.
Exactly. Paymon processes the second batch as new transactions. Your revenue aggregation doubles.
It would be like applying a historical patch diff to a live production branch, but the system doesn't check the commit history, so it just executes the changes again, completely corrupting the state of the application.
And in a six-tier architecture, that corruption propagates instantly. Flink computes the corrupted state, writes it into Lance for vector search, dumps it into Iceberg for batch analytics, and suddenly the co-pilot sitting on top of your architecture is giving the CEO wildly inaccurate projections based on duplicated seed data.
Just because of one extra refresh.
The engineering tolerance for error in these real-time pipelines is practically zero.
Which is terrifying. And the pressure to maintain that zero error tolerance explains our next source perfectly. The newsletter highlights a tool of the day called Notebook in Pi. It is an unofficial Python API built for Google Notebook LM. The source notes that it gives developers full programmatic access to features that the web user interface currently hides, making it ideal for automation workflows.
This raises an important question, right? It touches on a fundamental cultural tension in data engineering right now.
Are developers basically rebelling against restrictive user interfaces to get their automation jobs done?
Pretty much. You have major tech companies building incredibly powerful AI tools, but they frequently release them with consumer-friendly web interfaces while delaying or restricting API access.
Because they want to control the user experience.
Exactly. But an enterprise developer doesn't want a user experience. They want infrastructure as code.
They want to integrate NotebookLM's contextual synthesis into a CI/CD pipeline or an automated reporting job.
Right. A user interface is inherently a bottleneck for a developer. It requires manual interaction, which introduces human error and breaks automation.
Which leads to those Paymon Delta errors we just talked about.
Exactly. So by building an unofficial Python wrapper, developers are effectively reverse engineering the network requests the UI makes, bypassing the visual layer entirely.
It's that constant tug of war.
It really is. It highlights the friction between the enterprise desire for controlled lockdown access, like Microsoft's Purview APIs, and the developer's mandate to automate everything just to prevent pipeline failures.
I mean, if the official door is locked, or if it requires a human to turn the handle every single time, developers will systematically dismantle the hinges to build an automated conveyor belt.
They have to, just to survive the cognitive load of managing these massive architectures.
Which makes our final source today incredibly fitting. Considering the intense pressure of perfectly executing streaming C jobs, bypassing UI restrictions, and managing the astronomical compute costs of open model inference, it's almost ironic that someone has actually turned this exact existential tech struggle into a literal video game.
It is a brilliant piece of industry satire, and it cuts surprisingly close to reality.
It really does. It was shared on the Data Engineering subreddit. It's a new browser game called Data Engineering Tycoon.
I love that title.
So good. The gameplay loop starts with you manually clicking a button to collect data for just 50 cents a pop. From there, you begin scaling up your infrastructure, managing server loads, and hiring engineers.
Classic tycoon mechanics.
But the ultimate goal of the game is to successfully research and build AGI before your company goes entirely bankrupt.
Which is hilarious.
I love this. It's like SimCity, but for data pipelines. But wait, I have to push back playfully here. Isn't trying to reach AGI before bankruptcy literally just the actual real-world business plan for every Silicon Valley startup right now?
Yeah, absolutely. The fact that players are praising the economic realism of a browser game about data pipelines is incredibly telling.
The source actually notes it has surprisingly realistic economics.
Because it brings it full circle for us. The underlying mechanics of the game perfectly mirror the exact capital expenditure reality we analyzed earlier with Azure and Fireworks AI.
Right. You aren't just writing code in this game. You are managing a massive accelerating burn rate.
Building AI at scale is fundamentally an exercise in managing financial runway. A foundational training run, or a massive persistent inference deployment, requires hundreds of millions of dollars in compute.
Plus, you have to hire elite engineers to manage those six-tier streaming architectures.
And pay the exorbitant cloud provider bills. So the game accurately simulates the terrifying tightrope walk of the modern CTO. You are constantly bleeding capital on infrastructure, just hoping that the intelligence you extract from your data compounds fast enough to generate revenue before the funding dries up.
It's wild. The player sweating over their virtual server budget is experiencing a distilled version of the exact financial pressure driving the entire enterprise market right now.
You're balancing the staggering costs of the physical hardware against the existential race to build the ultimate intelligence.
Right. Because if your pipeline breaks because of a Paymon Delta error, or if your inference engine is too slow, you bleed cash. In the game and in reality.
It brings some much-needed levity to a topic that usually involves incredibly dense white papers and severe security audits. But it also serves as a stark reminder of the sheer human effort required to keep this digital infrastructure from collapsing under its own weight.
Life imitating art, imitating data engineering. It really pulls a whole ecosystem into focus. So looking at our journey today, we started at the macro level with the convergence of operational and analytical data at FabCon.
Exploring how unifying data creates a massive blast radius.
Right, which forces Microsoft to deploy LLMs via Purview just to police the semantic intent of other AI agents.
Which then drives the massive demand for optimized compute.
Exactly, leading us to Fireworks AI democratizing top-tier inference speeds on Azure, stripping away the deployment friction of open-source models and threatening the margins of proprietary-hosted providers.
Then we crawl down into the developer trenches
to examine the brittle reality of six-tier streaming lakehouses, where a single duplicated C job in Paymon can corrupt an entire downstream architecture,
forcing developers to build unofficial APIs just to automate their way out of the chaos.
And finally, watching all of that architectural stress manifest as a browser-based tycoon game. It has been a phenomenal tour of the modern data landscape.
It really has.
But before we sign off, I want to leave you with a final lingering thought that builds directly on the sources we unpacked today. We spent a significant amount of time discussing how enterprises are utilizing AI agents to actively monitor and manage the behavior of other AI agents inside secure data lakes.
Yeah.
And we just looked at a game where human engineers frantically manage resources, optimize pipelines, and balance budgets in a race to build artificial general intelligence. It makes you wonder, once we actually achieve true AGI, will it look at our fragile six-tier lakehouses and our chaotic capital expenditure models and essentially start playing a tycoon game of its own to figure out how to optimize and manage us?
Wow. When the system realizes the human engineers are the most unpredictable delta in the entire architecture, that is a truly fascinating paradigm shift to consider.
Definitely something to keep in mind the next time you're tweaking an ingestion pipeline or monitoring your cloud compute spend. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We will catch you next time as we continue to decode the rapidly evolving world around us. Have a great one.